You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Last week, Google released the words each state misspells the most, and we want to hear from you about the words you trip up on the most. You can leave your comment on the Central Time Facebook page or email us at talk@WPR.org.
First, a lot of this year's presidential campaign has been driven by anger at the party establishments, about the other political party among supporters of candidates in the same party, and about the direction the country is headed in with fears of crime, terrorism, and an uncertain economy.
Our next guest is most worried about that anger. He says that in many ways, things have been getting better in the United States. Crime is down, the economy is gradually improving, but anger has become a self-sustaining trend.
Richard Keitt joins us now. He's a professor and director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University. His piece on anger and politics appeared in the La Crosse Tribune. Richard, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's good to be here.
Well, this is a huge question. What are people angry about this year?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, if you ask people what they're angry about, it's a whole range of things. I mentioned some of those in the column a couple of weeks ago: immigration, terrorism, political correctness, globalization, taxes, education. There's a whole realm. The frustrating thing is when you take those things one at a time and you look at what is actually going on. Sometimes even if you point out, say that, but we're actually doing well in that sort of thing, or this is the sort of thing that, say, politicians can't really offer a solution to, it's a different kind of problem, then the anger doesn't dissipate, right? So there's something driving the anger that is not necessarily what's actually going on in the country. There's a disconnect there.
Yeah, you point out in particular in your piece the crime rate going down, violent crime way down compared to a couple decades ago. The economy not magically great, but improving since the Great Recession. So that's some of the reality. But you say in some cases it's the perception of the state of the country that's more important.
Well, anger is a kind of a self-sustaining emotion in many ways. It can be contagious. So if somebody gets angry at you, you are likely to get angry in return, even if you're not sure what they're angry about. And this thing can take shape in populations as well. And I'm not trying to say there aren't legitimate things for people to be angry about. There's always a number of things to be angry or frustrated with. And yet I wonder if partly what's going on is we're hearing so much about anger that that in itself becomes a source of frustration with politics.
Well, I wonder where it's coming from originally, and it may be a chicken or egg question. Is the populace at large angry? Is the way our media online, on the radio, elsewhere, presents stories drive that anger? Is it from political leaders? Where do you see a lot of the responsibility for this anger coming from?
I suspect that it's a real easy way to motivate people quickly. Even if you're a politician and you want voters to turn out, it's much easier to get them to turn out by becoming angry about something. So you motivate the base, right? You get them angry, and so what you do is you tend to exaggerate some wrong that's taking place by stressing how bad this is currently or how bad it could be. You exaggerate what the other side has said about it. And when you do this over and over and over, you tend to get a picture that things are really falling apart. After all, the people that I'm listening to keep telling us that, you know, this is a real crisis. And so I think partly it's our politicians that this is anger becomes a mode of campaigning. And then I think it's also our media. You get people tuning in to programs that are exaggerating the significance of something rather than just, say, reporting some good stories. And so I think there's a number of things going on here.
Talking to Richard Keitt from Viterbo University in La Crosse about anger and politics. So, Richard, let's talk about a political leader. You write, and you just pointed out, it can be an effective way to rally people to try to play off of and exacerbate the anger. But I could see a politician saying, I'm reflecting the anger. I'm reflecting the emotions that are out there. I am as a representative of the people representing their anger. Is that good leadership, or is there a better way to deal with public anger?
I think recognizing and acknowledging anger is important, but when we're electing politicians, we're electing leaders. And although you can motivate people to act through anger, anger is never an effective leadership tool. Because it inhibits people's judgment. People never think clearly when they're angry. And so if you want to be an effective leader, you motivate people in other means. You get them to think about a future, a direction to go. And so anger is useful. It's a kind of a useful short-term strategy for motivating, but it's not a good leadership tool.
I want to name some names here, and I want to start on the Republican side of this presidential race. Donald Trump, obviously expressing anger, and people are taking that and running with it, and now he is the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party. How did you see anger playing out in the last bunch of months on the Republican side?
I think what we've just seen is it's become really effective, and it's certainly resonating. I'm not sure how much it... 1 year ago, when we were talking at the earlier parts of the primaries, if we thought that anger was the emotion that characterized the voting public, it certainly is what we would say is one of the main motivators right now. I don't think that's a result of the changing conditions in the Republic. I think that is a result of campaign strategy and what's turned out to be very effective.
What do you see as the long-term impact of that? Say, under a presidency run by someone who ran on reflecting and maybe channeling that public anger, what does that mean for policy?
Well, it means that we don't really pay attention to policy. When you're angry, you don't use good judgment. You don't really think clearly. And what happens, individually, we've all experienced this. When we get really angry about something, we do something that's rash, and then we come to regret it when we think more clearly. And we think, well, what should we have done? And so when we're the voting public responsible for choosing a leader, we have to take that into account. So I don't see a good result of this, but I'd be surprised if anger is sustained over the next several months. I'm not sure how long it can be sustained as a political motivator. It'll be interesting to see.
On the Democratic side, there's been anger expressed, especially by Senator Bernie Sanders, toward Wall Street, and a lot of people picking up on that. But it seems like the main story of anger and politics on the Democratic side is between the two remaining candidates and more so their supporters. How do you see that playing out? What do you make of that?
Well, you see within the Democratic Party, I think you see a lot of people shaking their heads and saying, why is the party trying to self-destruct, fighting itself like this? But again, this is exactly the sort of thing that happens when people get angry with one another, that there's we don't have a clearly rational end to be achieved. One of the things that I talk about in the column is anger as an emotion looks backward, not forward. And so it seems like as the primary campaign is winding down, people are becoming more angry because they're focusing on grievances from weeks or months ago.
Now, you work with people who are leaders at various levels, I think at business, communities, things like that.
Right.
How do you counsel people to take that starting point, maybe, where there's this rising feedback loop of anger, and set that aside and find a more productive way to lead and to bring people along, people who are caught up in that anger themselves?
Well, one thing I do is just try to take the election part out of context and say, in general, what do you look for in a good leader? What do you look for? Example, who is a good corporate leader? We've all got all kinds of studies, Jim Collins' study, Good to Great, where he talks about level five leaders. These tend to be fairly quiet, introspective people who don't draw attention to themselves, but they really focus on how they can make other people better, how they can select good people for the right positions and encourage them. And then I ask, if this is what we look for in well-run businesses, why aren't we looking for it in a national leader? And so I just try to take the discussion out of the context that we usually put politics in its own category, right? I just try to take it out of that little narrow focus and say, well, how do we talk about leadership in general? Most people can pick out a good leader when they see one.
Richard, when you say quiet and introspective as a quality of a good leader, I can't imagine that lasting more than a couple days on the campaign trail or the primary as it exists today.
Well, and this is one of the problems. We have a campaign system that really favors getting high-level exposure on national media first. And the traits you need for that are pretty much the opposite of what you need for becoming a really effective leader and becoming experienced on the local level and then building your way up. And what we find is the best corporate leaders are people that really don't like to draw attention to themselves. So many of the top companies, they have leaders that you wouldn't recognize their faces or their names because they don't like the spotlight. And so this raises a real interesting question for American politics is, do we have a really flawed system for electing our leaders in the first place? Is that, and are we really seeing that come to play now in this election in particular?
We're talking about anger and American politics with Richard Kite from Viterbo University in La Crosse. He says angry talk, angry feelings do not lead to good policy, and good leaders need to be able to dial down the anger.
And you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think this has been a particularly angry election year? And where do you think the anger is coming from? Do you feel it? Do you agree with our guests that we should be concerned about all this anger and how it could shape politics? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we continue our conversation now with Richard Kite from Viterbo University. He says a lot of politics in the United States are being driven by anger, and that's not a good thing for the future of the country.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about the future of the country? What in particular has you concerned? And do you feel this anger that we're talking about? Or do you share his concern that anger itself is one of the biggest problems we have to worry about? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now with Charlie in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I would say that anger is a huge part of the political process right now, but I believe a lot of it is coming from the fact that the media is not doing their job. Recently, the Ben Rhodes article that in which he talked about playing the media to pass the Iran nuclear treaty, shows that people are just not doing their job and the people are not being informed correctly by the media. I mean, even NPR was implicated as taking money from a company wanting to promote the Iran treaty. I mean, we have Lois Lerner taking the fifth. We have Hillary and her staff not answering the inspector general. Why isn't the media bringing up this stuff that fuels the anger?
Charlie, thanks for bringing those points up for us. Richard, so an idea that in this case, politicians aren't being responsible, that the media aren't holding their feet to the fire, the voter left without much to work with, he's saying.
I think the media pretty much does what we want it to do, that most people look to the media, first of all, for entertainment, and that pretty much most of the information that you really want to get, you can find somewhere. And if you really want to demand that certain news organizations, for example, take a closer look at something, they're generally responsive to that. It's just that there isn't much of that demand. So I think the media kind of does what it does. I think it does make one angry sometimes when we don't get accurate information or the kind of information that we're looking for. But I don't like to blame the media as if saying that it's being irresponsible. I think it's doing just what we want it to do.
Back to our callers now with Sandy on the line in Milwaukee. Sandy, hi.
Hi. I wanted to just say that I have been a Democrat all of my life, and most of my friends are Republican. And this year, it's like if you're not a Republican, you're an enemy of the people. And I think a lot of this comes from the rhetoric from the candidates and social issues. And Bernie's slogan is revolution, and Trump's candidate, slogan is change, and everyone says Hillary is for voting for the same political stance that we have had for the past 8 years.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sandy. I want to get our guest in here. We've got a lot of other callers waiting, too. To her first point, Sandy saying the divide between parties seems stronger. And a lot of polls bear that out, Richard. A lot less flexibility, a lot more us versus them mentality. Is that part of the problem?
There's more divisiveness. You find many more people on the two extremes, and not many people that identify themselves as centrists. That say, for example, somebody says, I'm a moderate Republican, I'm a moderate Democrat, because there is where you're able to build some political consensus and actually get practical things done. And so here, it's an interesting thing. We have people talking about they're very upset that politicians aren't really doing anything, and yet very few people identify with the center where things actually get done.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Richard Kite from Viterbo University about anger and politics, especially the politics of 2016. Back to our callers now with Lachlan in Oshkosh. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is sort of the flip side of the first question. I was wondering, to what degree do you think that social media and social media culture impact discussion in the same way that a lot of people think that mainstream media does?
Oh, interesting. Thanks for that call, Sir Richard. Social media gives us a lot of opportunity to get angry with each other when we're talking politics.
Yeah, it does. It makes it possible to be very selective in the kind of media that one consumes, because of course you get feeds and so forth from your friends, and so the more you participate in this, the more selective your perception becomes, and this becomes really problematic because we, as a nation, we don't have a source of information that we all agree upon, that we can rely on and say, okay, we disagree with on say, for example, immigration statistics. What's really going on with immigration? How has it changed over the last few years? Where should we go and look for this to settle our difference about fact, about the information? Right now, we don't really have any of these kind of accepted authorities for public knowledge. And social media is in part responsible for driving this, you know, this wealth of information and kind of perspectives that causes us to lack a way to resolve differences.
Thanks for that call. Time for, I think, one more caller. Kathy is with us in Madison. Kathy, hi.
Hi. I have an idea as to why people are angry and what can be done, but it takes cooperation from everyone. First of all, I should mention I'm a Viterbo alum, and I have worked as a mediator and an arbitration, and I've also done a lot of dispute resolution for a federal agency. So I've seen a lot of anger coming from a lot of places. And recently I saw a documentary about individuals who were, I think it was caught in Katrina, and how they weren't getting their houses built, the promises that the politicians made weren't being kept. Every politician has its own little group of people they try to have endorse them. And nobody is quite honest with anyone. And I think that the people as a whole who are feeling angry, they feel so disenfranchised because they have no one to speak to, no one to listen to, no one to go to, no one to help them.
Kathy, thanks. Just about out of time, Richard, but a feeling of powerlessness and disenfranchisement. Do you think that's maybe a big motivating factor in anger as we wrap up?
Yeah, I certainly do. And I think the solution is we need to have people much more involved in local politics from an early age. The more we get involved at the local level and then learn how the process works, how to get information, how to be effective, the less frustration we feel with the system as a whole.
We'll leave it there. Richard, thanks so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure.
We've been talking to Richard Kite. He's a professor and a director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University. We've been talking about his recent column on anger and politics. It was in the La Crosse Tribune, where he's a member of the editorial board. By the way, we've got a link to that piece. It's on the Central Time Facebook page. And while you're there, you can share some of your answers to the questions we've been posing. Do you see more anger in politics than usual, even in a presidential election year, more than you've seen in the past? Do you think social media is driving some of that anger? What are you angry about, or are you worried about the anger you're seeing in American politics? Again, head over to the Central Time Facebook page, get a link to Richard Kite's article there, and share your thoughts, your insights on those questions.